League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to The Investing Show, where we discuss the news that matters to investors and get ideas to help you make more of your money. I'm Simon Lambert of This Is Money. Joining me in the studio, I've got Richard Hunter of Wilson King Investment Management.
Simon.
Richard. And Nick Batsford, Tip TV. Nick.
Simon.
Coming up later on today's show, we've got Justin Urquhart-Stewart of Seven Investment Management, who's going to be talking to us about dividends and where to find the best shares that pay them. But first, a quick look at some of the things that have been in the news. So, we started the year in fine fettle. Santa's rally kicked on through the 12 days of Christmas. At the moment, it's the second week of January. We've had eight FTSE record highs in a row, which to those of us who spent a long time waiting from 1999 for the FTSE 100 to regain the peak that it hit at the end of that year, seems very, very strange indeed. We've also had the pound and the dollar, pound falling against the dollar and the euro on more news and suggestions of a hard Brexit. But we've had some good PMI numbers, which shows that our factories, services, manufacturing, all going very well. And savings rates have inched up slightly at the start of this year, a 0.01% addition to the Best Buy savings rate. And mortgage rates have come down a little bit. So, everything looking rosy for 2017? Two things on the horizon, Brexit and Donald Trump. Mr. Hunter, they're getting ever, ever closer, and are we going to get more and more nervous as they do?
Yeah, I mean, we've got obviously both the Dow Jones continuing to knock on the door of 20,000. We've got the FTSE hitting all-time highs, and even though index numbers per se mean very little, they tend to be more psychological, it is a good time to step back and say, what are the reasons for this and what could change? Now, the FTSE 100 and the Dow Jones are facing totally different issues at the moment. In terms of the Dow Jones, what they're factoring in there is that Trump comes through with a lot of the tax reform, infrastructure spending, etc., that he has promised. So that's a question mark over that market and whether it continues to rise. Notwithstanding, of course, that the companies have to come up with their side of the bargain as well in the interim period to keep the market there in terms of earnings. Now, in terms of the UK, it's pretty much been, for the FTSE 100, about sterling and the sterling weakness that you mentioned and the sterling weakness that we have had since June. If you strip out the sterling effect in terms of the FTSE 100, we haven't really done very much at all. So that's another reason, I think, for optimism in terms of the FTSE 100, again, providing that companies come up with their side of the bargain in terms of earnings. A lot of that rise that we have seen has been currency related as opposed to general market exuberance. And I think we've been saying recently also that for either of those markets, it doesn't feel like a totally irrational, exuberant bull market as we had in the old days in either of those markets. And that's, generally speaking, that's a comforting factor as well.
You can see the start of it, though, can't you, at the moment, with this sort of view at the start of the year that the only way is up, maybe. You can see the seeds potentially being sown. But over here in the UK, the market doesn't necessarily look that expensive, does it? Whereas it does look a bit more expensive in the US, depending on what measure you use.
I think you're right. And I think that there's reason for more caution, probably stateside than here. It is sometimes better to travel than to arrive. The point to make in the UK, of course, as we have, is stripping out the currency effect. We haven't been on an outrageous run at all. But yes, inevitably, if it turns out after Article 50 that the UK is going to be hit harder than expected, that will probably hit the FTSE 250 a bit more. Equally, if President-elect Trump comes in with a raft of measures which just aren't living up to market expectations, you could quite easily see something of a pullback in the States as well.
And just quickly before we move on to Nick, it's the pound, isn't it, where we're seeing the Brexit effects at the moment. It's the announcement on this, announcement on that. You know, it's sort of as we veer, we're sort of moving down this path and bouncing off the walls between harder Brexit, softer Brexit, harder Brexit, softer Brexit. And as we do that, the pound goes up and down against the dollar and the euro, doesn't it?
Yeah, and underneath that, both in terms of the Premier Index and the FTSE 250, you've had quite a good run from the banks, for example. Some of that's a read across from the States, where there's this hope for lighter regulation there. And in the UK, it's been the house builders, which have tended to be knocked down a bit since the Brexit vote. But to date, hitherto, the UK economy and indeed house builders are showing no signs of slowing down.
Mm. And they've got their results coming out at the moment. And the other one, actually, that I was just going to ask you quickly about before we move on, is also bringing out results at the moment. We've got supermarkets, haven't we? And they're looking a lot better than they were a year ago.
Yes, they are. Part of that's weak comparatives. It wasn't such a hot Christmas last year. But also, of course, they've all got their individual story. But if there is a general kind of theme, it's that they have made mistakes in the past, be that strategy, be that overseas acquisitions, etc. And for a lot of the last couple of years, they've been putting their acts in order, Tesco in particular, but hurrying that along in the background, of course, has been the rises of the Aldis and the Lidls. So that has really focused the mind as well. So with the food deflation that we've been having for the last year, 18 months, that's also playing into their hands. So it's looking better for the supermarkets than it has done for a while.
But those share prices are already up considerably. So, again, yep. Whether it's better to travel or arrive will remain to be seen. Nick, you're going to take a little look at the predictions for the year ahead,
well,
aren't you?
It was Saturday morning. I almost coughed on my porridge when I saw Holly Black from the Mail on Saturday.
One of my colleagues.
One of your colleagues. The headline was, could the FTSE hit 9,000 this year? So this time, you know, a few months ago, we were at 5,000, 6,000, 7,000. The pundits are now talking 9,000. So, here's a statistic. Since inception, 1984, FTSE, 32 periods. How many of those months were positive? There's your quiz question for the new year.
So what, sort of percentage-wise?
No, so number out of 32, positive months for January.
Ooh,
15,
positive
10,
months for January.
5.
I think there were 22 positive
okay,
months
Okay, so 19,
for January.
So that's a good call. So 19, and basically it goes on, 15 of those as a whole went on to finish higher for the year. So basically the January effect, if you're a bull, is really quite a good signal, historically speaking. And obviously it's only when it goes wrong that it goes badly wrong.
So goes January, so goes the year, as they say.
Yes, they say. Again, this is all about this hard Brexit, the weaker currency, FTSE going up. Now, it was quite interesting. They quoted Tom Beckett from Sigma. He's been on the show before.
Indeed.
He was suggesting earnings growth circa 8% because of sterling weakness. So 8% was the level. He reckons, you know, the highlight, two-thirds of blue chips, the earnings are coming from overseas. So that's really, really important. His target, 7,400. So a little bit closer to where we are now.
And knowing Tom as I do, I couldn't see him as a man putting 9,000 well, for the year.
Well, I couldn't possibly comment on that. Oil and the miners are likely to be the major deciders in the outlook for the market, he was saying, so really keep an eye on the oils and the miners. Now, obviously lots of stuff's been said, and I've just picked up something in the FT, and I thought, of all the stuff I've read over Christmas, this was the most sensible thing that I read, and this guy was John Lee in the FT. Look into 2017, I make no predictions. Nobody has a clue, the government included, how Brexit negotiations will end, and all one can say about Trump presidency is that his administration is more likely to be pro-business, whereas Hillary Clinton could have been more pro-welfare had she won. I will remain fully equity invested, and hope that the proven management of my strong, conservative, profitable PLCs will continue to deliver.
There you go. A bold statement. A bold but cautious statement, I think.
Quite wise,
John Lee there. A man who's always worth listening to.
But we mustn't forget that we've got this Armageddon sell signal on the technical analysis, which doesn't run out until March, I believe, as per we talked about the last show.
I think it will be a very, very interesting year ahead. And I think I wrote a column last week, and the one thing I said in it, I put some headlines that I'd like to see. And my final headline that I thought I'd like to see was, Britain and EU agree to reach friendly mutual deal on Brexit, which I then signed off with, well, we can, but
true. Yeah.
As that news unfolds over the year, we will be, of course, revealing it all on the show and analysing it and bringing in our special guests. And coming up after the break, Our special guest this week is Justin Urquhart-Stewart of Seven Investment Management, who's going to be talking to us about where you can find the best dividends. So join us for the second part of the show then. Richard, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much. See you in the second half. Goodbye. Welcome back to the Investing Show. Joining us now in the studio, we've got Justin Urquhart-Stewart of Seven Investment Management. Justin, welcome to the show.
Pleasure.
Happy New Year to you.
And to you.
You've come in to talk to us a little bit about income investing. Always a very, very popular subject whenever we discuss it, whenever we write about it. And in a minute, I will get to the million-dollar question of where the best dividends are.
Right.
Our viewers will unfortunately have to wait a minute for that. But first, I was going to ask, what does a good dividend look like? Because I think that's an important thing to talk about first, isn't it? So when you're looking for income, what are you looking for as an investor?
Remember, income comes in various guises. It can come by way of the dividends, as you say. And so if you're looking for a good dividends, you're looking for something which is a reliable form of income. Where do you find those? Well, you know, all those good solid companies, they're usually solid. They do change their spots. And you're looking for something which is regularly going to come through. Now, the good news about companies providing regular dividends is they're often held in our pension funds because that's what they do. And therefore, the pension fund managers, which, of course, a lot of us will be dependent upon for part of our pension money and insurance money, will be talking to those companies saying, you're going to provide me this income coming through on a regular basis. And when they don't, they get thoroughly spanked. A good example of that was when the banks suddenly realised they couldn't pay any dividends because they were going bust. And so all the more reason, therefore, you look at those who've got a long-term track record. The other issue to particularly be aware of is those that suddenly look as though they've got a brilliant dividend. That's because suddenly the yields look fantastic, and that's because actually the price has gone down. And of course, it's actually purely a mathematical issue. It suddenly looks very attractive, but look underneath it and you suddenly find the company ain't there. But there's another bit there I just mentioned, and that, of course, we mustn't ignore is that of the fixed interest side, which also provides you with income, but it's not a dividend. It's a yield, but still vital in terms of the income. It's not all about companies.
Obviously, I think one of the problems that you alluded to there is when people look down the list and they just go for income for income's sake. The old-fashioned value trap, dividend trap, whatever you want to call it. It's that stock that's yielding 7% and you think, wow, 7%, that looks absolutely fantastic. Everything else is yielding 4. But there's quite often a reason for that, isn't there? What about the ones lower down the scale where they're yielding below the market yield? They can still offer a decent dividend if they can grow it over time, can't they?
Exactly. And if you can find those ones which have got that long-term track. I mean, the joke always used to be, remember, we was a discussion used to be with Lloyds Bank. Remember, Lloyds Bank always paid a dividend, which was effectively the same as you used to be able to get on its deposit account when we had something known as interest rates. And you'd be better off with the divvy. No, but if you can find the ones which are going to be the pairs of the future, and that's always difficult because people will mix that up with growth stocks, which have got an exciting future. You're looking for something which is going to actually be almost appear relatively dull, something which is actually going to be so necessary and build up steadily over time that actually it can afford to grow its dividend. And they're really difficult to try and find those. There's no particular sector you can try and find them in. It's a matter of actually trying to spot individual companies. Otherwise, you're going to have to go back to those sort of businesses which are the regular pairs. And where are they going to be found? Often amongst the utilities, those rather boring areas, amongst some of the rather tedious areas you'll find, such as the drug companies, and also all those ones which the consumers are using, Reckitt and Benckiser and things like that, again, which have got a long-term issue to them. Finding the next generation of those can be really rather difficult. And of course, a few years back, we used to include the banks with that, but we know what happened there, and that's a classic issue for all of us. The fact that they've been doing it for years does not mean they're going to continue doing it for the years. Therefore, you have to spread it out, because sometimes they're going to go wrong. Drug companies are a classic example, because something horrific happens in their drug set, and lo and behold, the dividend's gone, which you've been relying on.
I think another thing to bear in mind, especially when you see that yield that's too good to be true, I'm sure Justin can talk us through it, is one of the things you can look at, of course, is dividend cover, to see just how safe on the face of it, that particular dividend is.
That's a very good point indeed, because if you're actually making sure that there's a running line of profit there, how much of that profit could it actually pay out in dividend if it had to? And if you've got 2, 3, 4 times, and they're doing it consistently, that's good news. If over the years you suddenly realise this is being squeezed down till eventually you suddenly find the company is borrowing to pay the dividend, whoa, hang on a second, and that's a key area of worry that people should try and look out for. But the issue with this, again, comes back to some of the boring issues around investing, is you do have to spread this around, this broader range of asset allocation and distribution around the world to be able to make sure you can get that sort of spread. Because there are obviously some dangerous areas, as we know, some of the fixed interest market we don't want to gain here. But equally, some of the high yield bonds can be very attractive. And at the moment, we're not seeing many failures in those sort of areas. Equally, there are some areas which have been unattractive recently, but now looking more appealing, like some of the emerging market bonds, which have become unappealing, but now looking more opportunistic. So they can be providing good returns, but they could easily change as well. So you need to broaden it out with some of the old favourites as well.
Mm-hmm. Richard, going back to the dividend cover thing that you mentioned there, temporarily you do find companies sometimes essentially paying their dividends, not out of profits, out of their reserves, effectively, don't you? Why would a company do that temporarily?
Because the market hates dividend cuts, or what used to be called the dividend being passed. In other words, not being paid at all. It is seen, rightly or wrongly, as a sign of financial strength to be able to continue to reward your shareholders. And if for whatever reason you can't do that, particularly if you have been paying one, it's something that the market will stamp on. If you're a high growth, tiny company, shareholders would probably rather you didn't pay a dividend but reinvested that money into growing your own business. But for an established company, a la Lloyds Bank, for example, from suddenly being probably one of the highest yielders in the FTSE 100 to have gone to nothing or next to nothing after the financial crisis, quite a shock to the system.
And companies companies don't want the institutional shareholders to sell out. They want good, solid shareholders to be there, and therefore I'll keep paying the dividend because I know I'll be able to afford it in a couple of years' time, so don't worry, stay with us.
So if they think it's a blip, essentially. For example, the oil companies, the oil price has suddenly sunk down to $30.
Yep.
They think it's not going to stick at $30, that sometimes it's going to go back up to 50, 60. We can ride this out.
And it was a classic example we've seen in the past year where they were dipping into reserves to keep it going. And I think most people said, it will be all right. It can't stay at that price forever. It will come back. Equally, it's not going to go back to 150 anytime soon. But it wants to see itself as being stable again. Mm-hmm. There's one other area which should be addressed as well, which investors can take count of, and that's actually where they end up with a fund which is unitized. And if you've got a unitized fund, it doesn't matter whether it's capital or income. You can literally slice off segments of the fund that you've got, which is growing every single year, and you're just taking that as a form of income. You're selling capital, combination of capital, and you're selling income. But because it's unitized as one, it's a pretty tax-efficient way of trying to do so. But that doesn't sound as appealing as picking individual things. But people do have the choice for that.
So, in a minute, I am going to try and pin you down on some of where these good dividends are. But firstly, actually, one thing I should have asked at the beginning, which is something I think that actually investors rarely consider, unless they're maybe new to the world of investing, and then they will actually ask this question of, why would a company pay a dividend in the first place? What is the point of them?
Remember, shareholders, all of us as shareholders, are part owners of this business. I have bought part of this business, and therefore, as an owner, I'm expecting some form of return. And you can do that for me in several ways. One, the value of the company goes up. Two, you're going to pay me an income. Or three, you might give me a goodie bag every year as a free voucher for something. A bit obscure, but some companies still do. But for most of the time, it'll be providing a dividend. So that's why they should do so. But companies must be clear with their shareholders. I always think companies get the shareholders they deserve. They should turn around to the shareholders and say, look, this is our deal to you. We're a slow-growing company, but we'll pay a regular dividend of X percent. Stick with us, and that's what we're going to do. What investors don't want to do is have companies that say, we're going to do that, and then probably can't afford it, or start changing and swapping around the entire time. That's, to me, it's unprofessional. It's not a well-run company. Okay, disasters can happen, as happened with banks, as happened with oil companies. But really, I like to see clear dividend policy and see how they've done it over the years. That's what investors should be looking for.
And then they can obviously take those dividends. They can either take them as income if they want, but if they reinvest them and they compound over time, that's where most of the total return from the stock market comes from, isn't it?
And do that in a tax-free environment as well. Do that in your ISA or in your pension scheme, even better.
So, if we look at the UK market at the moment, looking from the big guns in the FTSE 100 down into the sort of the mid caps and even into the small caps, where do you see the best dividends at the moment?
The ones I think we're looking more attractive now are the ones that are actually coming back, and that has to be the oil companies, because the oil price has now reached a level which is looking more stable. okay, we're dependent on one OPEC and OPEC countries actually agree with one another. They've signed a piece of paper and therefore the price is going to be all right. Well, I've got a piece of paper, it doesn't affect the oil price. So it's unreliable. But it's more likely this sort of share price this sort of oil price will be sustained. And therefore, those companies we're now seeing with BP and Shell are looking a lot more stable, particularly BP than it was. And so I go back to those. The banks are coming back. Now, these aren't many in the way of UK banks. You're having to go overseas for some of these, particularly in the US. That makes life a bit more difficult for the British investor. But they're going through. As it were, we've still got our British ones. We're still looking sickly. And I don't really want to get too involved in any of those. Then you've got the old-fashioned ones, which are providing nice areas for the consumer. And these consumer suppliers, again, they've gone off the boil with the likes of Unilever, those sort of areas, and Reckitt and Benckiser. But again, they're still supplying on a regular basis, domestically and internationally. And so that with Unilever, and it's as a good international play as well. And of course, with those companies, particularly like Unilever, you've got a huge overseas income as well, which has been very nicely translated back into sterling. And there's a key issue for many people. Look for those companies which are benefiting from the low sterling. So you may find some of the investment trusts, which are well invested overseas, translating back into UK, because that's one of the benefits we've got in London. We don't actually have much of a UK stock market. We have a global market situated here. So we take advantage of that, use that to your advantage.
And would you include some of the engineers as well who are doing quite a lot of business overseas in that sort of bracket as
well? Yeah, I mean, certainly we've got a relatively small number of those now, but certainly in the oil sector, those engineers, but also in some of those which are particularly, and if they can take advantage of what Mr. Trump might be doing with infrastructure, again, that'll be a key area they can try and use. Again, nice translation back into currency as well. So we should also be looking at some of those areas which are then providing us with other benefits, which, you know, again, might seem a little bit more esoteric, and you might buy this by way of a fund, and that might be some of the emerging market bonds. Again, be selective as to which emerging markets we're dealing with. They were very unfashionable indeed. No one wants to go near them. Their currency has been heavily hit. That's the past. Actually, the bad news is out. Now they're actually looking a lot more appealing. So a fund which would give you that sort of diversification elsewhere around the world, I think would all be a good part of it. And then don't forget, and again, these are sectors you can go to which will be giving you high yield in terms of corporate bonds as well. The failure rate we've actually had on those has been incredibly low. Why? Because most of the companies have been generally rather profitable. And at this stage, I would be expecting a far higher level of failure rate coming through, and we're not seeing it. So the higher rate ones, which would normally be high yielding ones, normally higher risk, they've got the risk there, but it doesn't seem to be coming through as yet. So take advantage of that whilst you can to actually get your income in there. But you'd have to watch it, because in 2 years' time, that may well turn as America comes to the end of its sort of boom cycle, which Mr. Trump will be looking to try and extend. But after 2 years' time, he may find that quite difficult.
This is pretty much central to what we've been talking about for more years, and we care to remember about reasons to invest in the stock market. Obviously, part of that's education. Part of that is doing the paper portfolio before you actually start to invest. Part of it is making sure that, you know, it's money which is to one side after you've made other allowances. But in terms of a real reason even to be looking at the market at the moment, and as Justin said, we're going to be in these economic cycles. But the fact of the matter is we're still at historically low interest rates. Of course, one of the reasons to eschew the market over the years has been, well, I'm getting 3%, 4%, 5% in my bank. Why would I take that kind of risk? Whereas, of course, we're now flipping over to the other side, whereas you're earning next to nothing for that money in your bank account. And this opportunity to educate and inform about the market is almost falling in our laps with these interest rates being where they are.
So if we can get, ordinarily on an income fund now, 3.5%, 4%, may not sound fantastic, but compare that to 0.0 all on a bank account at the moment, deposit account, okay, maybe half, maybe 1%. It's still well ahead of that. Put it in a tax wrapper, it will improve it. And I say, if you can find that in a unitised fund as well, where you can get income and capital growth combined, then you'll get the benefit of it. So people need to do some investigation into these and take it from the single companies providing dividends into the funds providing some dividends in there. As I say, it may be in terms of different asset classes like the high yield bonds or the emerging market bonds. Or by way of a unitised fund. It's quite a range.
It's worth mentioning here as well the investment trusts, which obviously have the benefit of being able to hold over some income in the good times to help pay it out in the bad times. And that's why there's a list of them that they call the dividend heroes that have a record running back to 50 years of increasing that dividend every single year, year in, year out.
Let me declare an interest. One of my major shareholders is one called Caledonia, which is the old Kayser shipping family. And they invest in longer term businesses. Which pleases me a lot. And their whole aim is, don't shoot the lights up, just give us a rising dividend, which is great. And that's what they do. There's an exchange-traded fund called the Aristocrats, and the whole idea of that is selecting stocks which have had a history of over 20 years rising dividends. And you have to think, really, consistently be able to do that? But they have. So that's actually in the United States, that's not here. So these things are worth digging out, worth finding.
Justin, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Richard, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much for watching The Investing Show. Join us in 2 weeks' time for the next one. Goodbye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.